are listening to The Caregivers with Lon Kiefer.
Hey there. Yeah, you. I'm talking to you. You might be a caregiver. Hey, I don't know. You might not even know. Welcome home to the Caregivers Podcast, where you're never alone. My name is Lon Kiefer, and I am a caregiver, and I'm also your host. You can find me on all social media as Lon Kiefer, or as I'm sure you know by now, I'm known as Doc, the Defender of Caregivers, and you can find me there on Facebook. Our website for the podcast is thecaregiverspodcast.com. And we are the Caregivers Podcast on Facebook. Over on Twitter, we are Caregivers Pod. And for those of you that don't know what we're doing here, we're talking to the caregivers of the world, whether they be professional or personal family caregivers, in an effort to make certain no one is ever alone on their caregiver's journey, even if your companion is just a voice on a podcast. All right, truth be told, that's kind of almost verbatim, but I record it each time, and that means a lot to me. I know it might sound silly, but I like to say it. I like to remind myself what we're trying to do here. It's just like on the bottom of emails and correspondences in a blog or whatever, I'll write, "Thank you for caring," and I write "you," all caps. It's harder to do. I write hashtag you might be a caregiver and thank you for caring when I do posts. And these things can be automated and take no real effort each time, but it means something for me to put that effort in it. And this podcast is kind of personal, so I wanted to point out that I'm doing that intro each time. Because it means something to me more than just podcast number 27, and I don't actually know which number podcast this is, but it's somewhere around there. We went 6 months or so by now, and the podcasts come out on Fridays because TGI Friday means nothing for caregivers who are always on and never take time for themselves. But we took that out of the intro because you never know when somebody's going to listen to this podcast, and I didn't want any distractions, but here I'm rambling and giving you a distraction. So I talk about PROPER, professional and personal family caregivers, and this is kind of a PROPER podcast because it's a professional podcast, but it's also a personal podcast because our guest today is someone that I sort of, kind of, a little bit, maybe, grew up with. I moved to the Catonsville area of Maryland in, I think, the fifth grade. And I was a late starter to all the cliques that start in middle school or elementary school. And honestly, get out your small violins. I never felt comfortable nor enjoyed high school. It wasn't until my maybe senior year when sports and Chris Schmitz and Laura Lentz pulled me out of all of that by forcing me to socialize and what have you. And I then grew very late to the game to enjoy high school because I was a decent athlete and I had two very popular girlfriends. They weren't girlfriends, finger quotes. They were friends that were girls. And anyway, my sister Megan, who was 2 years behind me, was quite popular and probably moved into this situation young enough that she was insulated from some of the stuff that I keep reminding myself that I went through because, you know, it was so terrible, right? But anyway, our guest today is someone that went to high school in my sister's class, and I didn't know her that well, but I got to know her later. And the way I got to know her more was kind of seeing her evolve in my feed on Facebook and then becoming aware that she went to nursing school sort of as a second career. And she ultimately hired me to speak at my alma mater, University of Maryland School of Nursing, to as part of the MANS Association, Maryland Association of Nursing Students, because our guest, who I'm going to give you her name in a minute, was on the board. Actually, she might not have been on the board. She might have been a student leader at the time. She's now on the board. But anyway, as a sort of graduation event or ceremony, I was able to go and speak for them. And that was because of her name is Tess Bailey. And it was a great honor, and it went on. We talk a little bit about it in the podcast, but so this is how we sort of got rekindled. But I'll tell you something about this guest. She impresses me a great deal in how she's taking control of her life. We all have detours. Being a caregiver might be one of those detours. It may not be a direct path. It may pull you off of what you thought was your path in life. And you may resist embracing the term caregiver, and you might get some role confusion along the way or what have you. But in the end, we are in control of our own destiny and our own lives. And this guest on the podcast talks a lot about how she's serving others, but I want to give a shout out to her for the way she's living her life. I don't know if you've seen Virginia River, which is I think it's on Netflix. It might be, I should have done some more research on this as to who put it together, but I've seen it on Netflix, and Virginia River follows Melinda, quote-unquote Mel Monroe, who is a nurse, and she answers an ad to work as a midwife nurse practitioner in the remote California town of Virginia River, thinking it will be the perfect place to start fresh and leave her painful memories behind. But she soon discovers that small-town living isn't quite as simple as she expected. She must learn to heal herself before she can truly make Virginia River her home. So I don't know about all that backdoor drama or anything like that, the backstory, but our guest has done something very similar. It's not Virginia River. It's on the Chesapeake Bay, and it's called Greenbackville, Virginia. And she chose nursing as her second career, and Greenbackville, Virginia, for her sanctuary as she serves others. And for this podcast, just to tell you how rural this area is, she had to, quote unquote, drive out to the marina to get cell phone signal. And she's going to tell us about how she's done other off-the-grid things to serve others. And it's just an amazing story. She's not a professional speaker. She's just a personal and professional caregiver personality, and it is my pleasure to introduce to you Tess Bailey, Catonsville Comets class of 1982. Enjoy the podcast.
Tess Bailey, I can't thank you enough for I was going to say finally, but that's all on me, not on you. But Tess, thank you so much for doing this.
Oh, thank you, Lon. I really appreciate you asking me. It's an honor be talking to you today after having not seen you for so many years.
It hasn't been that long, but yeah, it is. I keep apologizing to the audience. I'll apologize to you as well. I'd prefer to do these in person. It's just that, you know, life is busy and logistics are such that most of them are ending up just like this, two caregivers on the phone. And you called it, by the way, when I told you I might, are coordinating the time, and you said, well, folks, you don't know what I'm talking about. I went to a basketball game at my old alma mater, where I started my nursing degree at UMBC, the UMBC Retrievers, and Tess said, you don't know, it might go into overtime, and you called it, Tess, 66-66, went into overtime.
Too bad I'm not a betting woman, huh?
Yeah, well, if you'd have bet on the outcome, you'd have lost. Because the overtime was ugly. They got trounced by like 20 points in the overtime. But did you go to UMBC at all?
I did not. I went to UCLA, University of Catonsville, left of Arbutus.
Yeah, University of Catonsville, left of Arbutus. Woohoo! Go on out there. Folks, Tess and I, we were not the same grade. You graduated with my sister, right?
Yes, that's right. I graduated with Megan.
Yeah, so Tess and I went to the same high school, good old Catonsville Senior High in suburbs of Baltimore. But anyway, let's get to the podcast. Thanks for doing this. I have a saying within the Defender of Caregivers world to honor yourself as you care for others. So please, if there's anything you would like to honor before you start sharing with others, a charity, something that means a lot to you, please have at it. Tell us what that might be and a little bit about yourself.
All right. Well, I have become passionate about doing medical mission trips every year. My sister's also a nurse. She's been a nurse longer than I, and I think this past year was her 11th or 12th year going. This past year was my 5th year going. The company that we go with is called Helping Hands Medical Missions. They are based out of Texas. If you want to visit their website for more information, it's www.hhmm.org. It's a fantastic organization. They do have mission trips all over the world. You do not have to be a medical person to go on these trips. You just have to be 14 years of age or older, and anything we need you to do, we will train you.
We're going to step on each other. It's the nature of the phone. I'm sorry. Keep going. I'm sorry.
Sure. No problem. It's a pretty amazing experience. You know, when you tell people you do this, they say, you know, oh, that's so great of you to do. You're a wonderful person, but that's really not, it's such a humbling experience to go someplace. And, I can't remember if it was Gandhi or Mother Teresa who said, that it's such a great experience to be able to do something for someone where they can do nothing for you. So we go down and care for people who have nothing. And it's just a very humbling experience. These are very gracious and appreciative people. We have been going to the same place. We go to a place called Santiago Texacuanga. That's in El Salvador, outside of San Salvador. The doctor who owns a hospital there, it's actually a maternity hospital, but he lets us stay there, and we do operations at the hospital. We also set up community clinics. So we go out to various communities. The people are notified ahead of time through flyers because they do not really have any form of communication down there except good old word of mouth. And we have hundreds to thousands of people that we see in a day sometimes. I believe the last trip this past year, there was a group that moved to their site from where they were in San Salvador to where we go in El Salvador. And over the two-week period, we saw over 10,000 people in the community clinics.
Oh, wow. That's amazing. I mean, 10,000 people is an almost unimaginable number of people to have interacted with. I mean, and I know the humble thing to say is you get more than you give, but look, I've referred to myself as an advocate for years, and I'm just amazed at the time commitment. When you go, I enjoy watching your sort of documenting it along the way on Facebook, and I'm very humbled by the effort that you put in, and I know that we're off to a good start. If you can't remember whether your quotes are Gandhi or Mother Teresa, I'm usually figuring out was it Jim or John Belushi, you know. So you get to go with your sister. That is pretty neat. That is pretty neat.
Yeah. Her and I actually, neither one of us have ever been operating room nurses, but we spend pretty much Monday through Friday in one operating room together all week long, and we don't fight. we work very well together. The general surgeon that we usually work with, we've all kind of clicked, and we've got our technique down so we can be efficient and take care of as many surgeries as we need to, hopefully try to get in as many people as we can during the week and give
them
a safe.
What what are the type of surgeries that you're doing? I mean, I'm familiar with, like, Operation Smile, where they'll go out and do, just thousands of cleft lip type of repairs, but you're doing various different surgeries?
We are. We actually have three operating rooms. One of them is geared primarily towards gynecological issues. We work in the general OR, which is more a lot of hernias. We do a lot of hernias, gallbladders, and then we have a doctor who's a hand surgeon who comes down and specifically does a lot of repairs. There's a lot of malnutrition down there, so you have people who are born with birth defects. I believe it's pterodactyly, where you have the extra digit that's non-functioning, so you'll have people with 6 or 7 fingers or toes. I know this past year he did an entire family, like all the children in the family. So if you can imagine, you know, here in the States, we're, you know, so focused on, you know, the physical appearance of people. And not to say that that's not everywhere around the world, but I think because of our social media and entertainment industry, that the physical appearance is very focused on. And to have something like this extra digit on your hand, I think it's probably very difficult for anyone to have. So to be able to repair these situations and help these people just have a good sense of self-esteem about themselves when they're struggling just to eat and have clean water is really an amazing experience.
So what kind of accommodations are you living in while you're down there? I mean, you know, if they come from that type of an environment, you're immersed in that environment.
We are, but we have the fortune of staying at the hospital. They do have some accommodations. Now, I don't want you to laugh at this, Lon, but I usually sleep in the convent.
Oh, God, they let you in?
Exactly. Well, only because I'm under my sister's wing, okay? She went to St. Mark's.
Your sister vouches for you, huh?
Exactly. She went to St. Mark's a lot more years than I did. So we stay in the convent, or there are other accommodations. You know, you get used to the conditions down there quickly, because you know that we know that we're only there for a week, and you can do anything in that amount of time, especially when you've, you know, put to your mind what you're there for, the purpose that you're there for. I might add, Helping Hands Medical Missions is a Catholic mission group. However, they do accept any faith, but we are up every morning. I'll even, in a minute here, I'll give you an example of what a typical day is for us. But we sleep in rooms. We're usually multiple people in a room together. This past year, I had 4 roommates, one of which was my sister, the other of which is the director of Helping Hands Medical Missions. Lupita is her name, and she is a wonderful person. So we have a lot of slumber party type things, except we're not up all night. We're usually exhausted from the day. And
oh, I bet.
Yeah, so a typical day is we're up about 5:30 in the morning. We are in mass by 6:30. Breakfast is about 7 o'clock. All our meals are prepared for by the staff down there. So it's specially prepared, ensuring that, like, our water is clean. And then either we are, by 7:30, we're either in the down in the operating room, those of us who are the OR being assigned to the operating room for the day, getting ready for our first case, or the people who are going out on clinic sites are out on the bus getting ready to go out to set up a community clinic site, which is like in a church. We'll go in a church and set up the operating rooms. We do have the fortune of having air conditioning in those most of the time, and we do have power most of the time, but there have been times where we have not had power. Power has gone out, and you still have to operate because you've got someone laying there on your table. We do not necessarily have backup generators here.
Tess, we grew up watching MASH every Thursday night. You're living it.
Somebody was just mentioning in one of the nursing groups I'm in about some days she feels like she's a cross between Margaret Houlihan and MacGyver doing nursing.
Hot lips.
And I thought that's it. Hot lips with gum wrappers.
Yeah.
The community sites are, like I said, we usually set them up in churches. We usually have a dental team with us, so they'll do cleanings and extractions. But people come in, they have, they line up, and then we have a triage team, which is where our 14-year-olds and older who are, we've trained them to do blood pressures, and then they'll come over to, to a table with a translator and one of us who will tell us, like, what three things can we do for them that day.
So much for planning. I mean, you're literally, as they're coming in, you're figuring out what you're going to need to do.
Right, and that's very limited what we can do. The thought process that you have to go in with is, what can I do with the resources I have right now to help this person? And that is very limited, but that's where we become very creative.
So Tess, I'm going to be selfish here on the podcast because I'm going to try and drag you into some deep waters where you might not want to go because I'm amazed at what you do, and I'm sure we could talk forever on just that. But I actually would like to talk a little about you and why it is you're doing this. Not what you're doing, but why. I don't know the full story, but I know that you came to nursing as a second or maybe third career, but you didn't go straight into nursing right out of high school. And I have witnessed the way you behaved as a leader within your schooling period of time, maybe even a mom to some other of the students. But tell us a little bit about that story, how you chose nursing, as a second career.
Oh, you didn't warn me about this. Now you're going to make me uncomfortable.
Well, you don't say it. Don't say anything you're not comfortable with. But it's an important distinction sometimes, because a lot of people run into a career and they're listening to messaging or patterns that they were told when they were younger, and sometimes it's not right for them. But I find nurses that come to this profession later in their career have a whole different level of maturity about it, and it's more of almost a spiritual journey instead of a career.
I think you're right, and this would be easy for me to talk about because I kind of displaced myself from it when I talk about it. I had actually started nursing school many years ago, but kind of detours in life, I had to stop. And when I returned, entered nursing school in 2010, I actually was definitely one of the older students in my class. I've always been a volunteer type of person. I've been on parents' club boards, mother's club boards, volunteered doing various events at both of my daughter's schools. And so it was kind of natural for me to step up and volunteer doing things. If everybody did a little bit, we'd accomplish a lot more instead of a few people doing a lot. So I got involved in the student government at school the first semester. I got involved with the NSNA, the National Student Nurse Association, and was on the board of both of those. And that is, you know, nurses are, our number one responsibility really is to advocate for our patients, to improve care, to see how we can work smarter, not harder. And with that, as an organization, which we have been, you know, as you well know, nominated or voted as the number one most trusted profession for many years running, and we can accomplish a lot of things together. So I think it's important that we get involved in these organizations to come together as a group, see what challenges that we have and what we need to do to improve them. And with that, people have to step up and take leadership roles to do that. So that was kind of a natural transition for me. My daughters were both older when I entered nursing school, so it wasn't like I had babies at home anymore. And that's what I was saying. We hadn't seen each other in many years because you were kind enough to be one of the guest speakers. I think I might have left this out. I was on the board of the student nurse board at my school. I was on the board of the Maryland Association of Nursing Students, and I was on, and I would attend the National Student Nurse Association conferences that they hold across the country. When we had the Maryland Association Nursing Students Board convention one year, you were kind enough to come and be our end note speaker. That, I believe, was in 2011, I think.
Oh, my gosh. So is that long ago?
Yeah. Yeah, it is.
You know, it was
2010 or 2011, something like that.
Yeah, it's funny when I see things pop up and how long ago some of my events were. I forget how long I've been at this, but that was a great event. And, you know, I remember having, you know, aspirations of wanting to sort of help launch nurses on their careers with a perspective to help them protect themselves, because they have such a, you know, they're so driven to help other people that when they can step out into the real world, the real world is often there ready to smack them in their face a little bit. And I remember I was not really prepared for that when I stepped out. I thought everybody would love me. I'm a nurse, you know, but the old joke, which of these things is not like the other, which of these things just doesn't belong. You know, sometimes when bad things happen, we're the only person that's not family in the room, and it can be an emotional wake up. So it was a privilege to speak to them, and I had several of your classmates or students then invite me to speak at their convocation. So I went to two or three different of the nursing schools that year and spoke at graduations, and it was a great honor. So thank you for having me.
I was so happy to have you in there, and you kind of got the energy of the room pumped up. These students had been going since like 8 o'clock that morning on a Saturday morning after being in school all week and studying. And, you know, then they attended breakout sessions all day. And then the end of the day, they're exhausted. Some of them traveled. We had it in Baltimore. And some of them had traveled from Hagerstown and Salisbury. So, you know, they had already been up for hours and hours traveling and then sitting all day. So you certainly got that group energized. And I think that's really what I'm getting at with getting involved as a leader. You want to help create motivation. You want to help be what says buzzwords these days, an agent for change. And you do that by motivating other people. So I think that's really what you know was the influence for me getting involved. I actually, and I know you don't know this because you weren't there, but when I graduated from nursing school, our pinning ceremony, the traditional nurse pinning ceremony, I actually received a leadership award from our nursing, our school at Catonsville, the nursing director there. And that was pretty overwhelming. I was actually president of my nursing class by that time. Never ran for it. I was nominated.
Nice.
And to have so many people think this of you, it's like, well, I guess if they think I can do it, then I guess I can do it. Let's do it, you know?
Yeah.
So.
Well, it's funny when there's nothing funny about it. It's just what, that's a saying to keep things moving. It's funny, but, when I talk to somebody like you, I hear it over and over again when I'm speaking to a caregiver personality, this sort of like, well, I wasn't sure, I wasn't that confident, but you know, you're achieving fantastic things and, you know, you're leading by example. And I don't know when you and others in the profession are going to get that confidence level. Maybe we really don't want you to get it, because then you get you get satisfied and don't try as hard. But you've gotten other awards. I was reading about the Days Award you got, and this is another one of those where someone nominates you and you don't even know that you're nominated until you win. What you want to tell us a little bit more about the Daisy Awards, or do you want me to do it? People would rather hear from you.
I honestly, I have to tell you, I just got that in July or August, and I actually honestly forgot about that with this conversation. I can tell you about what I got if you want to explain the Daisy Award.
Well, I mean, I know the Daisy Award is to honor nurses for extraordinary, extraordinary nurses, and that you were nominated, I think, anonymously by somebody that you had taken care of their loved one three different times in about a one-month period of time, and you also, even on your days off, you went in and, sat down with them, and, I don't know the Daisy Award that phenomenally well, but it's for the immune system, right? Stands for diseases attacking the immune system, I believe.
Right.
And
right.
But nonetheless, it's a very prestigious thing to be nominated for, and they raise a lot of money. I could have been a better host and have written something down about this, but it's not a, not that young people in their careers can't distinguish themselves. Of course they can, but I feel like there is a big, shift towards this type of thing for people to come to the profession, later in their careers.
I think so. I actually thought I had some information. So the Daisy Award is, nomination. It is, most people don't know about it unless you're a nurse. And what it is, it's named in honor of a young man whose family lost him. And they wanted to be able to honor the nurses that took care of him. So they came up with this Daisy Award. You're nominated by anyone. It could be a coworker. It could be a family member. And what it does, it actually entitles you to the benefits of the Daisy Award program, which I'm sorry to say I still have not looked up. So what happened was I was actually nominated by a coworker who's also a nurse. A former coworker who's also a nurse, whose mother became ill with cancer. And, of course, this is always a scary diagnosis for people. You feel helpless. You don't know what's going to happen. You know, you don't know what stages, what treatments. It brings out a lot of, apprehension, for these families. So what happened was her mom came to the hospital, and I ended up being her nurse that day. And I came in the room, and she said that I came in, they were nervous and scared, and I immediately took charge of the situation and explained to them what was going to be happening and, you know, that I would be there with them and they would not be going through this alone. And as you may know, I have a little bit of a sense of humor. I don't know if it's, yeah, if it's funny to other people, but it makes me laugh.
Hey, so, whatever works. I laugh at myself all the time, and other people look at me like, that's not funny. It's right. Just part of it.
Exactly. So, and they said that I provided some, you know, some humor to the situation, which laughter is great medicine, and so it helped provide some calmness to them and helped them break the tension a little bit. So that was the first encounter. The second time she came back, I was her nurse again. And then what had happened was I actually didn't come into work to see her, but I punched out of work and then went and sat with her for a while. Her her mom was close in age to me, so I sat with
right.
her a while and just kind of social talking. Like, we don't need to, every interaction doesn't have to be medically focused. We can just talk about, you know, what do you do at home and things like that. And then I had
well,
the privilege
of taking care of her. Well, I mean, that's the thing that came through so loud and clear as I was reading the nomination for the award, is that it wasn't the skilled side of your nursing career that touched them and made a difference in their lives. It was the person. It was the human interaction. It was the sense of humor. It was the empathy. It was the mere mention of saying, hey, I'm here for you. You're not going to be alone. I mean, there are a lot of people in professions that are very technically good, but they don't necessarily have that piece of it. And that I think is a nature caregiver thing. And that came through loud and clear on the nomination, was it was that side of you that they were so impressed with.
Well, I appreciate that. And you know, you don't see yourself as this person who's necessarily somebody who you would nominate. So it is, again, another humbling experience where you are. And you just feel like, well, I'm just, this is, you know, nursing is not just, this is what I do. Nursing is, this is who I am.
Yeah.
This is what I do, whether I am, you know, at work, whether you're out in public, in the grocery store, seeing a man in a wheelchair, picking up a can of peas and saying, sir, your ankles are really swollen. Should you really be eating all that sodium? Well, I can only afford these. Okay, well, do me a favor. Before you eat them, rinse them off and get some of the sodium off. You know? And he's like, lady, mind your own business.
Yeah. Well, you can't turn it off just because you punch out and leave your shift. You can't turn it off.
Exactly. Yes, definitely. So, you know, but when you were talking about before, you know, the one thing about nursing is, you know, when you were saying at some point you hope that we don't be like the, I don't know, for lack of a better term, the know-it-all, you know, we have to constantly remind ourselves that nursing is lifelong learning, and we will always be learning something new. We will be learning it from our colleagues. We will be learning it from our patients. We will be learning it from their family members, our subordinates, anyone that we talk to. Patients that have, I used to be the diabetic educator, at my last job. And, you know, I don't have diabetes. So when I would sit down and educate these people, I would ask them, what are you doing that works and what are you doing that don't work? That doesn't work, because your experiences for you having diabetes for, you know, 50 years, Your numbers are good. What are you doing that works? So I can share this with other patients and other colleagues. So, you know, reminding yourself that you don't have to be in school to learn. You have real life learning, you know, in your environment, no matter where you are.
there's no doubt, and I feel like I've definitely learned more from the people that I've taken care of and the families I've supported than they have from me over the years. And I mean, obviously it's different type of learning. Like they, you know, I can teach the medical, the aspects, but the life lessons that I've gained from interacting with the people that I've cared for over the years are just, I mean, they're priceless. I don't know what other profession, and not just nursing, but caregiving broadly, gets into these kind of intimate conversations without being somebody being under oath. I mean, we sort of are part of preacher in that we're taking sort of confessions, and we're, as you say, always students. I learn every day. I learn through these conversations, through the podcasts. It's truly a noble profession, but it's not without its emotional pains as well. You have a tremendous amount of loss. You have a tremendous amount of fatigue. If there's anything I could get across to people, as you know, nurses are, they're just, I mean, you know, staffing ratios, the potential to make a mistake, the high expectations of family members. I mean, it is an exhausting, never-ending profession. That's, thank God it's rewarding as well, because that physical fatigue has to be accounted for somewhere.
Right. And I have to say, along that note, you know, it's a service industry. However, we've become so, and I find this really sad, we've become such a customer service industry. So, you know, there's so many facilities that have, that are driven by customer service numbers. And,
yeah,
you know, we almost have our, it seems like we're heading in the direction of, you know, not having time to care for the patient because we have these customer service numbers to constantly be concerned about, and that's what I believe it's Medicaid driven now.
Oh yeah, yeah.
And I just find it really disheartening that we are so worried about that. It's really sad the way that the industry. I don't
yeah,
know.
Quality.
I could go on and talk about that for a long time, so I'll stop there.
Yeah, I don't want to let us get bogged down in that, because it can be frustrating to, you know the caring side of it, and then there's the business side of it, the regulatory side of it, the you know, quality measures and star ratings and things like that. They're also terribly flawed, but they have to be important to the leaders of these organizations, because reimbursement is tied up in them. You know, your occupancy rates in certain, you know, who comes and doesn't come, they all look at these ratings, and it's I don't have a better system, so I tend not to complain too much about a broken one, but I have often felt the urge to call Comcast afterwards, because I feel no remorse in raising hell online with Comcast, you know, or Xfinity. You know, I just want somebody I can complain to, because I can't do it to my waiter or waitress because I know how they feel. There is a side of us that has to learn how to just sort of take it. And I don't know that we're reaching a broad audience, but I know we are reaching some people. I had somebody send me an email the other day just thanking me for, I don't even know what, they didn't mention which guest it was, but it was giving them the perspective of just how you know, how taken for granted sometimes people in the profession are, and it taught them to give the benefit of the doubt to the person that was in front of them taking care of them more than they had before. And that meant more to me than just about anything else that I could get as far as feedback from the podcast.
Yeah. You know, even though people who don't have, or people who are in the line of not giving direct care to patients, you know, I understand all those numbers, I certainly think, and it's here, I'm going to quote somebody again. Well, I'm going to credit him with the quote. I'm not going to have the exact quote, but I think of this all the time, too. And it's Richard Branson, if you've ever heard of him. He has a quote that says, if you want happy customers, make your employees happy. Now, we all know that doesn't necessarily boil down to money all the time, but being treated with respect and appreciation being shown, recognition for doing a good job, I think goes a very long way. And then if you're a happy, loyal employee, then that's going to shine through in the people that you care for. People who are have those nurse-to-patient ratios that are overwhelming now, and I know California is 4-to-1, and I know that they are pushing for that in a lot of other places, but any medical surgical unit in any hospital at one point in time is typically like 6, 7, or 8 patients to one nurse sometimes, and that's in a 12-and-a-half-hour shift, which you have driven 45 minutes to get to your job. You're working all that time to try to find time to, you know, use the powder room and sit down and eat a sandwich for 10 minutes. You might not think it's difficult, but it is.
I have enormous respect for the people on the, as they call it, the front lines. Unfortunately, they used to call it at the bedside. Now they call it the front lines of the battlegrounds. I mean, it is a different profession. And again, I don't want to turn too negative here, but, on the side of me when I'm consulting with, leaders or being a coach, whatever you want to call it, with leaders in the industry is that they get so caught up in the numbers and the measurable things that they frequently lose that, or they pay, even worse, they pay lip service to it. Like, oh, thank you all for what you're doing, and then they double down on unreasonable expectations. I mean, it's very powerful in all relationships when things are, you know, out of balance, or if something sucks, just say, hey, this sucks. How can we get through it the best? But a lot of times leaders don't do that. They focus too much on the numbers and lose sight of the middle ground. And most of the people on the front lines get it. They know that it's a tough world. All they really want is a little bit of appreciation and respect, but sadly, they frequently don't get it from their leaders.
Right. And then, of course, and I know we want to try to stay away from the negative always, but, you know.
No, we're going to do the last 20 minutes of the podcast on all negative. Let's just go. Let's go all in on it.
You know, my last, the last place I worked, I had a wonderful manager. She was, had an open door policy, and it was evident in not only her saying that, but when you walked to her office and knocked on the door, which was always open, her computers faced the wall, so her back was to the door, but she stopped what she was doing, turned around, moved away from the desk, sat there, you know, listened to you, talked to you, and tried to come up with ways to problem solve to see how things could be worked out differently, whether it was from a disgruntled patient, family member, you know, a team member, whatever it was. So, you know, those people higher up, there are a lot of them that are struggling with that fine line between customer service and customer service. You know, I have to say she really made an impression upon me for only having worked with her for about 2 years. She is still we have remained friends, even though we've both, well, I've moved on from there to another company. But, you know, it's just, you know, those are the kind of people that stick out. Those are the people as a younger nurse, only by experience, not by age, that look to for inspiration.
Yeah.
And, you know, these are the qualities that I want to kind of display to people around me.
Yeah, I tell clients all the time, you know, I'll go into a situation and people will say, well, we're never going to get better staffing because so-and-so pays more than us. And I'm like, no, you can easily you can't overcome a 20% spread in your pay rates versus somebody else's. But if you can give an emotionally safe and supportive environment with the right amount of humor, but also seriousness, you can overcome a small discrepancy in pay, because I joke all the time, if I'm in a room of people that I'll be hired to go in and talk about the group that has a toxic culture or what have you, I'm like, look around, folks, quit complaining about what you got. If you like three of the people in this room, this is the job for you. Because sometimes you end up in places where you have the same challenges. You might make a little bit more money, but you don't have that comfort level with the people in the room. I mean, the perfect situations out there, somebody's already doing those because they're perfect. You got to make what you've got better by accepting it for what it is. But that does start with the leadership that has to take a humanitarian approach, not just an analytics approach. But at least from, I think I've about beat that up. I'm just impressed by what I've watched with you, Tess, as you've grown professionally and the way you've always stepped in. And I'm very proud, although I won't do any specifics because I don't really know them, but you've taken a profession that does allow you to live and work anywhere if you can adjust your lifestyle to that. And you've created what seems like a wonderful world for yourself, and I just commend you for that.
Well, I appreciate that. And you know, that does go along with what you were just saying about the pay. When I moved from where I was in Baltimore to where I am on the Eastern Shore of Virginia now, I did take a cut in pay. Then where I moved from my former employer of just a few months ago to where I am now, I took another cut in pay. But I'm moving towards something that I'm happier doing, something that fulfills me more, something that feeds that internal, hunger. I am doing home hospice work now. I knew at some point I would want to do home hospice, but I didn't think it'd be until much further down the line. But opportunities come up and you feel like, I guess this is the time, and I absolutely love what I do already. That's the great thing about nursing is that there's so many different disciplines for you to go into. So for those of us who love babies more than anything, but we're not really into being the nurse delivering the baby, which is wonderful, but some of us are geared more towards helping people in the dying process where what can I do? This person has had this long journey through life, and you want to help them have some sort of peace and comfort at the end of their journey. And what an honor it is to be at their bedside with them and their family and help them, pass over pain-free, comfortable, at peace with themselves. Kind of checking off their to-do list before they go. I can't begin to tell you, it's amazing. It's just amazing. And the things that you see and the celestial, if that's the right term, ways that people die. We all live in our own unique way, and we will all die in our own unique way. We all have our own little thing that we're going to do, and that's just amazing. It's just such an honor to witness all these. I can't begin to say how much I love doing this for now.
Well,
who knows?
Who knows? I mean, life and careers evolve, and I applaud you for taking those pay cuts. I've taken pay cuts. I've shifted from being a caregiver in a traditional sense to being a leader, to being a speaker, to being a consultant, to being back into being a caregiver in a leadership sense from periods in my life, and I want to end my career back on the front lines in some capacity as a hands-on caregiver again. I envy you that, and it's a shame that sometimes to find that right place, it does come with a pay cut or a sacrifice in your personal life in order to do what you want but that's the reward. You get to do what you want where your natural talents can be best appreciated. And, you know, it's been wonderful to watch you navigate those career and life waters to end up where you are now. And it's not all about a big house or a, you know, a big paycheck. You talked about death in a
quality
way that sounds
life.
Like, yeah. And
quality of life. Definitely.
Yeah. Well, on behalf of all the people that you touch, I just want to thank you for what you are offering others out there. And I keep stepping on you. You wanted to say something.
No, that's okay. I was saying quality of life. You know, we get so busy caught up in it. But creating a quality of life for yourself now instead of waiting for retirement or more money or that bigger house or that better car is you're going to be waiting for a lot of those things. If you can insert some sort of quality of life as part of your daily routine, that's helpful. You know, I just had a pedicure before we got on the phone. So, you know, to have somebody do that and massage your sore nursing feet, you know, that 1 hour doing that was my self-care quality of life that I did for the day. So,
I want to get together, come down in the area that you're down there. I love that area, and maybe I can we can get a pedicure together. I like getting pedicures, but Vicky won't let me have them paint my toes. I want them to paint my. She always makes me stop at the end of the pedicure and not get my toes painted. I don't understand why. I can't get
well,
them painted.
Well, let me tell you, my pedicure today included the women at the salon who I've been going to there for a little while now. The pedicure today included kimchi for lunch. I don't know if you've ever had kimchi at the Korean
dish. Yeah, isn't that like basically like nasty sauerkraut, but it's supposed to be good for probiotics or something?
Oh, my gosh, yes, it is. It's fermented. And, you know, I haven't been feeling well for a couple months, and I'll tell you, cleared my sinuses right up today.
Oh, there's something to it. I don't know what it is, but there's something to it. I've heard a lot of people talk about the benefits of kimchi, but that's a whole nother podcast. And I'm grateful for what you're giving to the world, and I'm grateful for what you're giving to yourself. The old adage, do something you love, you never work a day in your life. Good thing about that is that we're going to have to work forever, so we might as well be up to it.
Well, I have already picked out my room for hospice.
Oh gosh.
You all can put me in there. But you know, you're talking of possibly returning to the front lines. I will just let you know that I know my company is hiring, and you know how far it is from you. So I'm just putting it out there for you, Lon. You'd be great at that.
Well, the interesting thing is I still have my nursing license because you're allowed to keep, you know, you have to claim that you work a certain number of hours, and I'm able to claim that because of leadership and education and, you know, the academics, that sort of thing qualifies me. But I tell everybody I'm a nurse, but I'm smart enough not to use my license. But I'd like to get, I really would like to get back into the hands-on front lines role at some point. It's a few years off, but it's on my list. And I tell you, Tess, I appreciate this time. I've been telling myself for the last 4 or 5 minutes, oh, that would have been a perfect ending when you said all that beautiful testimonial about, you know, the emotions that you feel working in hospice. And I'm glad to have had these few minutes, but that would have been a perfect end, and I don't want to keep digging myself deeper and deeper. But is there, before we go, Tess, is there anything that you would like to do to throw honor and attention to before we say goodbye?
Well, before we do that, if you don't mind, I was reading through your caregiver distortions that you sent. And, you know, it says take a look and see if any of them are getting in your way. And I have to say, a little bit of all 10 of them.
Yeah, of course.
A little bit of all 10 of them. There are some that are a little more than others. But certainly I have a little bit of all of those. I won't say which ones are worse, but I think it certainly is a lot of these hit home for me. And I'm sure this is on your Facebook page and website, Defender of Caregivers, the Caregiver Distortion.
Oh, look at you trying to make sure you're promoting me. You're so sneaky. I will say one thing that I've picked up on in this podcast is that one of the distortions is, and I talk sometimes about these, I shift away from my own outline on the podcast from time to time, but thank you for giving some attention to the caregiver distortions. One of the things I have picked up on in talking to you for this hour or so is it's disqualifying the positive, but not quite that way. There's a twisted way to it, but, you know, you're one of these, you're just constantly saying, essentially, I'm just doing my job, I'm just doing this, it's, you know, it's not about me, it's about others, and that is fantastic, but, you know, I just want to tell you for a minute here, I don't know how true it is that you shouldn't stop and take some satisfaction in what you do, because I don't want you to miss those rewards. I see it. Others see it. That's why you keep getting these nominated for these awards. And all I have to say in closing is, Tess Bailey, you might be a caregiver. Thank you for caring.
Can I give a quick shout out before we go? You started to ask me to do that.
Oh, yeah. I thought your shout out was me.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Yeah. Well, it is, but there's somebody who's closer to me. There's a lot of people that helped me along the way to becoming a nurse. Financially, I had a lot of help to be able to go to nursing school and not have to work. So that was very much appreciated. My two daughters, Samantha and Rachel, who are young adults themselves, and I certainly wish, of course, that I could spend more time together, but they supported me wholeheartedly through all of this. And my sister Marion Bailey, is very important in my life. I don't think she'll ever know how much she is, truly. She supported me through nursing school, and dragged me into this mission stuff. It'll be fun. We'll spend the week together. We'll be in, 95-degree hot weather with cold showers. but now that I've moved away, I don't get to see her as much, but I certainly get to spend that one week with her, and that is a very special time. But I have to say, she is really one of my biggest supporters. My sister Isabel Bailey, she's my brother's wife, certainly, some really special people along the way. When it says it takes a village to raise somebody, it doesn't matter that you're 55 years old. You have that village around you and supporting you, and every interaction that you have helps create who you are. It's just the appreciation for all those people who are teaching me to try to be a better person every day, and trying to be a better person, that kind of naturally flows into trying to be a better nurse all the time too. I did not type that up ahead of time.
You did wonderful. Tess Bailey, you might be a caregiver. Thank you for caring.
Thank you, Lon.
Okay, folks, there you have it. We got another episode in, and my apologies to Tess for a couple of things, maybe my overly personal introduction, and for misunderstanding her pre-close, you say that three times fast, her pre-close shout-out. I'm not a complete narcissist, but I did really think she was just finding a way to be creative and compliment me on her way out in her salutary remarks. It was funny, though. this is a woman that went from being afraid to do the podcast to having me pre-close, what, like three times? Not because she wanted more time on the microphone, but because she wanted to make sure she thanked all the others that, you know, influenced her life. And, you know, she really thinks others are taking care of her when she's taking care of others. Tess is just flat out a caregiver personality, and you know, she's focused on serving others, and I'm just damn proud of her for simplifying her life so she can pursue this passion. She's indeed found a way to do something you love where you love doing it. So I messed that up. To, you know, the saying, do something you love and you'll never work another day in your life. Well, she's not only found a way to do something she loves, she's found a way to do it where you love doing it. So she no longer has to work another day in her life outside of a place where she wants to spend the rest of her life, or at least the foreseeable future. I don't want to, you know, doom her or confine her to just Greenbackville, but it's fantastic. She's enjoying the natural beauty that's out there and the Assateague ponies and all the wonderful things. And Tess, I'm serious. I'd like to bring Vicky down and find a way to, you know, follow the ponies or sit on the beach or do whatever it is that you do when you're able to relax and let go of the fast-paced life. And so anyway, folks, we all have unique caregiver stories, and I hope you're enjoying hearing some of them here on the podcast. Thanks again for listening. Please leave us a 5-star review. Let me know what you think. But most importantly, please share this with others that you think might benefit from these caregiver stories and the Caregivers Podcast. You might notice on Facebook we've introduced or invited others to join. It's not that we have a lack of people to do the podcast. There's no challenge there. It's that I really want to get some of these family stories. They're very profound and meaningful, but it's tough. It's tough to bare your soul like that, and people can be afraid of a microphone and think they don't speak properly. I mean, hell, listen to all the mistakes I'm making on this thing, and I'm a professional speaker. Anyway, okay, everyone, go out there, do what you do, be good, and honor yourself as you care for others, because you might be a caregiver. Thank you for caring. Bye-bye now.